I'm Doug Nadvornik with the Inland Journal podcast for Wednesday, March 13th, 2019. Many good books have been written about the history of Spokane. Tony and Suzanne Bamonte have been prolific over the years. The late Florence Boutwell wrote a series of books about the history of the Spokane Valley. And now Ty Brown has added to the collection with a new work about one of the early playgrounds of Spokane's elite. It's called Wandermere, Legacy on the Little Spokane River. Local golfers certainly know Wandermere as one of the region's older courses, but it has a long, interesting past as a resort that used to be open year-round. Ty Brown comes at this from a unique perspective. He's a West Valley High School and English teacher, but he grew up at Wandermere. His dad is the longtime groundskeeper, and his family still co-owns the place. In putting this book together, Brown used photos and documents saved by family members over the years. He gives us a look at a place that hasn't been written about much by historians.
The property out there was really like a sportsman's paradise is how it kind of started. And Francis H. Cook, one of the Spokane pioneers, he ended up living out on that property, and he's the one that actually built the lake. And the lake is really the centerpiece of that business because they use it for ice skating. He had an ice business. He would use the ice and store it in a big barn that they had out there. And before refrigeration, they'd use that as one of their business practices. They'd have hunting, and people would spend the night out there. And it was basically a sportsman's paradise. He ended up selling that business, that entity, so he could go off and build the road to the top of Mount Spokane, which is another thing he's known for. But the successive owners of that still use it as, you know, a dairy farm on top of the fact that people were ice skating on that lake and fishing down there, and basically just using it as a natural retreat from the city life in Spokane. Because back, you know, it was way out there back then. The Little Spokane River is really only 9-10 miles from downtown, but really back in those days before the automobile, and it was hard to get around. It was out in the woods.
So you talked about Mr. Cook, but there were also other people who had homes out there. Why was that such a lure for folks who were, you know, the big shots in Spokane?
It was just a great escape for some of these guys. Judge Binkley, one of the big wigs in Spokane after the Great Fire, he kind of made his heyday in rebuilding Spokane and with the banking industry. He had Montvale Farm out there. It was his fishing cabin that he had, and that evolved into Montvale Farm, and the Montvale block downtown is named after that farm that he had on Little Spokane. There was a lot of Spokane pioneer bigwigs, if you will, that had their country estates out there. Louis Davenport, which was known as Flowerfield, which is now St. George's School. T.S. Griffith, he had his dairy farm, and he had a collie. He would raise collies out there, and that is now is referred to as the Glen Tanna Farm. The Spokane Country Club, of course, is the big magnet that was the draw out there for people. And a lot of that had to do with J.P. Graves building his estate out there, the Waikiki Estate, which is now owned by Gonzaga University. It's a Beaux-Arts retreat house.
Yeah, right.
So, but as you head up the river from the mouth, really there are these big country estates that all went along. And then the golf course, Wandermere Golf Course, was just right on the other side of Dartford, which is, you know, comes up next to J.P. Graves, a Waikiki Estate. And the book is Legacy on the Little Spokane River, because Wandermere really is about the only thing left as it was intended as a natural year-round sports paradise playground, even though now it's just the golf course. But it really is the legacy there, because a lot of these other places kind of came and went. And it's just a beautiful area, though, for people to, you know, draw these people.
Well, I like your reference to the fact that it's a half-hour drive, essentially, from Wandermere to downtown, but it used to be, back in the days before we had modern cars and all this, it was quite a jaunt to get from downtown Spokane out to that area.
Yeah, exactly. I know that Francis H. Cook, one of his intentions was to have a rail line going out to his property out there. That never did come to pass, but that would have been quite a good thing to have, an electric rail line here, like they would, you know, going to Liberty Lake or Nat Park and one of those other areas in town. It just never came to be. But it was a long journey. And I think that was, to answer your question, that's one of the reasons why people were drawn to that. It was out of town, but yet you really weren't that far from town.
So there, you mentioned Wandermere Lake out there. That's an artificial lake, is it not?
Yeah, yes, it is.
Why was it created, and how was it made?
Well, there's a natural spring that runs right along the Highway 395, or Wandermere Road is what it's called now. And there's a lot of springs in that area, and that's what the big draw is. If it wasn't, the springs there are what make that place what it is, because this, the just the natural waterway. But Francis Cook, he dredged that out and put that lake in there, like I say earlier, for the ice business and just for a recreation area. And then when my great-grandparents purchased the property in 1930, they actually dredged that down even further so that they could have swimming as well. Because it was a pretty shallow body of water. And so they dredged it down, and then they incorporated the swimming aspect to the business as well. And their intention was to put a golf course in there, but they also wanted to capitalize on the fact that it was already used as an ice skating rink, but they also added the swimming as well. So they really, it was amazing really for that time period in 1930 to take on such a huge endeavor as to create this, to keep going, to, you know, sustain the business. You had to have something year round to keep it going. You couldn't just operate as a golf course. And when they first built the course, it was really a 9-hole golf course. The intentions were to start with 18, but they put 9 holes in, and it wasn't until 1948 that they put the back 9 in. But golf was really needed in Spokane at that time in 1930. Downriver, often it was referred to as Riverside as well, that was about the only public course in town. You had Manitou, and you had the Spokane Country Club, and you had the Hayden Lake Country Club nearby. But Downriver was literally busting at the seams for people trying to get on the golf course, waiting lists, and it was just so hard to get in there. So Wandermere came about. Granted, it was 9 holes, but it really, you know, took some of the pressure off of Downriver, and it was quite busy. And then Indian Canyon came on just a short time after Wandermere was in play. So there wasn't a lot of golf courses in town, but there was a lot of demand for it. I think that was one of the reasons why that my great-grandparents added that on as well.
Well, I think one of the interesting parts is not only was it golfing, not only was it skating, not only was it swimming, fishing, there's also a ski hill adjacent to that. Tell me about that.
It's funny you mentioned that. People always, that's almost always the first thing they say, was there really a ski hill out there? And there was. And the big thing with that is the Spokane Ski Club at the time, they were really looking for a place to hold ski jumping events. Ski jumping in the 30s was a huge thing in the Northwest. Spokane really developed ski jumping, you know, way before any other place did. In the early 19-teens, people were ski jumping here off of Browns Mountain. But the Spokane Ski Club started there. And they really wanted to be on Mount Spokane, but the road up there was just an arduous journey to get up there, and they didn't have parking. It was just a lot of hassles. And so they worked with my great-grandparents and my grandparents to lease the golf course and build a ski hill. So my family built the hill, and then they used the hill, and they shared the profits of this. So in 1933, they actually had a ski jumping event out there, and it was really successful. 20-some thousand people, is allegedly the largest sporting event in Spokane history. The newspaper articles talk about traffic jams, you know, 2 cars wide from Boone and Division all the way to Wandermere. And it was quite the spectacle. And so it was so successful that they went ahead and did it again the next year in 1934. But of course, the main reason why we don't have ski hills and lower elevations is that there's not a lot of snow all the time. And that was the issue. It got to be to the point where it was just, they'd have to truck in snow, and then actually from 1934, they brought snow all the way in from the Cascades, and it just got to be too expensive. And ultimately, Mount Spokane got the Spokane Ski Club's lodge built there, and they formed their own ski jumping hill. But, you know, it was 33, 34, the Spokane Ski Club had it, and then in 38, Wandermere actually went on their own, and they formed their own ski club, the Wandermere Ski Club, and they had a competition there as well. And there was talk of, after that, having the Olympic trials there for the 40 Winter Olympics. Of course, that was originally slated to be in Japan, and the war broke out, and so that kind of went by the wayside. And then they had one last hurrah in the 50s, in 1954, with the Spokane Ski Club again, and that was the last time that they had a competition up there. So the big thing really was the toboggan ride. They used the ski hill for the ski jumping events, and they had a little bit of skiing, but it wasn't much of a hill to actually do some downhill skiing. Most of it was the jumping competitions, and then they had a toboggan ride there with actually an escalator that would take people up to the top, which was a new, you know, Mount Spokane had one of the first escalators around, and Wandermere put one in about 1938, which was pretty new as well.
We're talking with Ty Brown, a West Valley High School teacher who has written a history about the Wandermere area in North Spokane. So when did Wandermere become mostly just golf?
I would say things turned about in the 1960s, 70s, probably mid-70s. By that point, the ice skating and the swimming kind of went by the wayside, and they really started focusing more on the golf course. The issues surrounding that are, you know, liability insurance, and it was tough to run a business like that year-round. People become interested in other things. Before television and before people could really get anywhere, they would, you know, go to these recreational destinations in Nat Park and Liberty Lake and even the local parks, Cannon Park, Manitou Park. They all had ice skating back in those days, but things change, the culture changes, and I think a big thing, it's just really expensive to operate a place where there's a lot of risk of people getting hurt.
What is Wandermere now? Is it mostly a sort of a destination golf course?
Well, it's one of the few privately owned public courses, which is great to have because you pretty much can make your own decisions. And like I say, my family has operated that since it began in 1930. But it's basically known as just, you know, Wandermere Golf Course. Not a lot of people know about the history of it, but it is a really well-respected golf course. It's beautiful. It has a lot of water features. It is basically surrounded now by urban sprawl, houses pretty much all the way around it, and then the freeway goes right over the top of it. But it's kind of like the calm and the storm, if you will, of Spokane's, you know, sprawl. And it's kind of nice to have that little oasis on the Little Spokane River and a getaway for people. But it is definitely known as one of the nicer golf courses around.
So how did you put all this stuff together?
Well, it was a labor of love. It was a great project. I really love history, especially local history. And the more I started thinking about it and the more information I started to uncover, not only through my grandparents' collection, great-grandparents' collection, parents' collection, my uncle's collection, it was just basically a detective work putting all the pieces together. There are great newspaper articles in the Spokesman Review and the Spokane Chronicle and the Spokane Press. It was a learning experience for me, and the most fun, I think, was just uncovering things that people really didn't know, or even maybe family myths and legends out there of how things were named or how things came about, and then kind of uncovering that might have been slightly different. But overall, I think just putting the legacy down on paper and trying to get a written record of everything that's gone out there in 90 plus years.
So are you getting some reaction yet?
Yeah, so far, a lot of what people say is they really didn't know that much about Wandermere. Some people don't even know that Wandermere is a golf course. They just think it's a part of Spokane because the north end of Spokane is kind of referred to as the Wandermere area. And a lot of the people that actually swam there or skated there, it makes me happy because it brings back memories for them. I've heard a lot of times, well, that was our first date, or I met my husband there, or my parents used to take me there. We had our high school senior picnic in 1957 there. So it's nice to bring back those memories because most of the swimming and the skating and the picnicking took place before my time. So I just have to go off of stories. But it's really nice to hear that I've, you know, brought back these memories for some of these people, and I've told people about something that they didn't even know existed. And a lot of people that live in the area had no idea of what all went on there over the years.
I think the one feature that golfers most is the clubhouse, which is, you know, a big lodge-like sort of historic building. How has that changed over the years?
I love the clubhouse and the fact that that was the very first thing that was constructed out there when my family purchased the property. There were some barns out there and some houses from the previous owners. But the clubhouse, I think they just had this vision, you know, that they needed to have this centrally located building, and everything would revolve around it. And so when the clubhouse was actually first built in 1930, they used that as basically a warming area for the skaters. And when the golf course finally opened in 1931, they had the pro shop located in there. But it looks, from the outside, people would think it looks relatively the same, but on the inside, it's changed a whole lot. Wandermere, from about 1935 to 1945, was run by a private club called the Wandermere Club. And so they used the clubhouse. They rented the clubhouse, actually, for my parents, and they would have slot machines in there, and liquor laws were different at the time. You couldn't drink hard alcohol unless you were a private club. You'd have beer and wine, but not hard alcohol. And so they went private, if you will, had a private social club so they could have the slot machines and so they could drink on Sundays and so they could drink liquor as long as they followed the Washington State liquor laws. After Prohibition, it was just, I think, a learning game of trying to figure out how we could introduce alcohol back into our society without going down the same road we went on before Prohibition. And so the clubhouse, for the first 10, 12 years, really was a social club. It had a banquet facility in there. They had bands that would come and play. They had gambling, and it was only open to the people that were part of the Wanamere Club. People skated and swam and could golf open to the public, but going inside the clubhouse was a private entity. In about 1948, when they put the back nine in, that was pretty much the end of the social club and the private club. And a lot of that had to do with the changing of the laws, where you couldn't have the slot machines and you could have, you know, liquor in establishments. And so that's when it changed. And during that time, they really reconfigured the clubhouse. They, you know, moved the lounge from the basement upstairs and put an apartment in the downstairs. And at one point, my great-grandmother lived in the upstairs apartment. Business was being conducted on the main level, and my grandparents and my uncle and my mom lived in the basement apartment of that building. So it's really changed in that regard, in terms of the fact that my family pretty much grew up in that building. And now it's just, the whole building is just part of the business.
Well, it must have been fun as a little kid to essentially have the run of the place.
Yeah, I would think so. I talk to my mom about that quite often, and her memories maybe aren't quite so fond. She just said it was really noisy. The dance floor and the banquet room was right above where they lived. But it had to have been a pretty magical place to just continually be around customers and people. And that's kind of how I feel when I grew up there. I know just hundreds, if not thousands, of people around Spokane, just for the fact that I was always hanging around the golf course with my family when they were working there, and I see people all the time, and they're just customers, but customers really isn't the right word. They're, you know, part of the extended family of the golf course, which is probably the draw that my parents and grandparents have had and why they've been with it for so long. It's such a neat, tight-knit community.
So what's your relationship to the place now?
Now, I do work there in the summertime a little bit. Being a school teacher, it kind of affords me the opportunity to work there. I mow greens, or I work in the restaurant, or I work in the lounge, or whatever it is. And when you own your own business, and especially a business like that, you have to wear a lot of hats, and which is kind of nice, because you get the opportunity to do a lot of things instead of maybe just being ingrained into one aspect of your job. So pretty much my part in the business is filling in when I can, and now with this book out, I like to talk to people about the history of the place and learn myself.
Before we finished with Ty Brown, he wanted to talk about one thing we hadn't asked, how the name Wandermere came about.
This is one of the, I guess, mysteries, if you will, or we didn't really have hard facts onto how it was named. My uncle and my mom used to always say, oh, your great-grandmother named it, because Wandermere means, you know, a reflection off the water, the sunlight coming off the water, and wander could be possibly like wanderlust or wandering around, which is not really that far from the truth. But doing the research that I did, I learned a lot about my great-grandparents, and they started really together in Butte, Montana, but they were really involved with real estate, and they had a real estate company that would bring them down into the Salt Lake Valley area. I found this photo album that had these pictures of my great-grandfather from the early 1900s, and some of the captions on the pictures would say, at the bridge at Wandermere, but it was spelled differently. Instead of an E in the middle, it was an A, and I got to thinking, that's weird, they spelled it wrong. But then the more I thought and the more I learned, these pictures were taken well before they owned the Wandermere property in Spokane. So then doing further research, I realized that there was actually a resort in Salt Lake City in the early 1900s that was called Wandermere. And that resort had a spring-fed lake where they had ice skating and swimming and amusement rides. And so my great-grandparents would visit that place when they went to Salt Lake on their business trips. And ultimately what happened when they got eventually to Spokane, they purchased the property on the Little Spokane. And in my eyes, the inference that I make is they basically created what they found and what they enjoyed in Salt Lake City.
Ty Brown is a West Valley high school teacher and now author. His new book is Wandermere, Legacy on the Little Spokane River. To find and subscribe to the Inland Journal podcast, you can search for Inland Journal in iTunes, NPR One, or Google Play, or find it on the Inland Journal page at SpokanePublicRadio.org. Tell us what you think of the program by sending comments to inlandjournal@kpbx.org. or you can record your comments on our listener call-in line at 509-232-6904. Thank you for spending time with us today. I'm Doug Nadvornik.